You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Tarragona.
When I'm 64.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Fran Race, who just broke into song there just as I hit record on the recorder. Remarkable.
Hello, Rich. Hello, Lionel. Hello, listeners. I have finally recovered my voice and I am prone to sing as much as I can.
A little bit of Beatles there. Wonderful. Where are we, Lionel?
We are in Tarragona, in Catalonia.
In Spain.
In Spain at last. Yeah. Well, this is, got to be careful here. Yes, we are in Spain, but we're in Catalonia, one of the regions that has a very strong and very proud sense of its own identity. I'll talk a little bit about exactly where we are after I've summed up stage four of the Vuelta. We left Andorra this morning and we came to Tarragona, 198 kilometres. There were five riders in the break originally: Stefan Rossetto of Cofidis, Diego Rubio of Caja Rural and his teammate Nicholas Schultz, Juan Felipe Osario of Manzana Postobon, the Colombian team that's riding here this year. If you've seen them on the TV, they're the guys in bright pink. And Johan Lebon of Frances de Jour. I'm not even going to do a Duran Duran joke here. No relation to Simon Le Bon, obviously. They got 8 minutes up the road at one point. With around 70 kilometres to go, it split and Rossetto and Rubio went clear together. They were finally caught with 8 kilometres left. A few crashes just to report on. Wilco Kelderman, Sunweb's overall hope here, he crashed but got back on. Domenico Pozzovivo, not so lucky. In fact, very, very unlucky, because he crashed along with Danny Moreno of Movistar around 3.3 kilometres. So only 300 metres outside of the zone, where if the crash had been 3 kilometres or closer to the finish, he wouldn't have lost any time. As it is, he's lost 3 minutes 25. So not a good day for his overall hopes, although Romain Bardet, of course, his teammate, is in the top 10 at the moment. The stage winner was Matteo Trentin, the bunch sprinter from Quickstep.
Oh, we had a bit of an argument about this at the tour, didn't we? Francois, you were talking about the contenders, I think, Trentin was up there in the prologue, wasn't he, or the first stage time trial on the tour, and you were talking about him as a potential yellow jersey because of his bunch sprinting prowess, and I said Trent is not a bunch sprinter, and today proved it.
But I was basing that on a sort of patchy memory of his stage win in Lyon in 2013 in the Tour de France. But yeah, it was a powerful break, that, wasn't it? A big break, and he finished it off well. Of course, he won at Pinerolo in the Giro last year. I mean, that was very, very hilly. You were there, weren't you, Rich? And now he's become the 100th rider to win a stage of all three Grand Tours. Vincenzo Nibali completed a set yesterday. Matteo Trentin of Quickstep has done it today. Trentin has ridden for Quickstep the whole of his professional career, but will go to Orica Scott next season. The interesting thing about him, Matteo Trentin, is that he's from Trentino. I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
I feel like you've been called Lionel Watford.
if I was from Watford, that's very true, yeah. Another little factette about Trentin is he is the current holder of the Ruban Jaune, the yellow ribbon, which was a prize created by Henri de Grange in the 1930s, and it's held by the rider who has recorded the fastest average speed in a one-day race over 200 kilometres long. And he got that when he won Paris-Tours in 2015, 49.6 kilometres an hour. I think, because I saw his bike at the Giro last year, he had a sticker on the top tube with a little yellow ribbon on it. I'll check out whether he still has that on his bike tomorrow. So Matteo Trentin won the stage ahead of Juan José Lobato of Lotto Jumbo. Tom van Asbroek of Cannondale was third. Trentin's taken the green jersey, Chris Froome still in red, Davide Villela of Cannondale in the King of the Mountains, and tomorrow we've got a tricky little uphill finish that might catch a few people by surprise. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, but just returning to where we are, we're in Tarragona, we've come into Spain, a bit like Francois during the tour. He suddenly perked up once we crossed the border into France. I feel Fran did the same today. He's done all of the driving, a real long drive, 3.5 hours on tricky roads, a little bit fast at times for my liking, but, yeah, you know.
But that's because I got so excited with a couple of songs, you know, that I felt that I had to put the car at dangerously high speeds, you know. And I could feel that because of your weight in the back seat, the car was getting a bit unbalanced, but still it was worth it.
Extraordinary. I should point out, we at no point could we possibly have broken any speed limits in that car. I always wanted to do a student road trip, and these last few days have been very like that. Richard and I will be in our own car tomorrow. I can't say I'm not looking forward to that.
Come on! Aren't you enjoying this sense of family, of close bonds, of rice cakes flowing from the back seat to the front seat? Come on, that's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Also beautiful was the fact that Richard and I bought a baguette and some cheese and chorizo for lunch. We left that marinating on the back seat. So we will return to that, I think. But here we are in Tarragona. I was anticipating a beautiful city because all the photographs I've seen of it. There's a Roman amphitheatre in the centre, a bit like there was in Nîmes. But we're stuck out on the edge of town next to an unfinished sports palace and an athletics track and kind of, it looks like roads that haven't quite been finished. And not that Spain isn't a beautiful country, but our first introduction on this race, they've not brought us into the most beautiful part of Tarragona, have they, Fran?
Yeah, you know, the whole Spain suffered a real estate bubble 10 years ago. That means that we were on a fever of building up as many things as possible in order to, you know, move money and some of the money did pour into the pockets of those interested parties. And at some point, the bubble broke. And that means that at many Spanish cities remain this kind of road structures that are built ready to be built up, but yet empty right now. And in this case, we are in a sport complex which is meant to host the Mediterranean Games next year here in Tarragona, but it seems that it's one of those giant humongous projects that are created in Spain and somehow become fundless at some point midway through their development.
Well, back to the race, chaps, and back to food as well. A very refreshing antidote to what we saw at the Tour de France, with riders coming into the press conference with little Tupperware bowls with very kind of wholesome, nourishing food, was Matteo Trentin came in tonight with a massive piece of cake from the press buffet. He spotted the cake on his way in and asked put his order in for a massive piece of cake and sat there in the press conference eating it.
About the cake, I can tell that I was spending some time chatting to the Caja Rural press officer, and since we wanted to have two pieces of cake each, we thought that it was probably non-fat cake, you know.
Well, I can confirm it was full of chocolate and cream. It was delicious.
Well, there we go. I mean, Quickstep, what a start to the Vuelta they've had yet again. I mean, they're very good at this, aren't they, winning bicycle races? But if you look, you know, second yesterday with David de la Cruz, stage win the day before, up there in the team time trial on day one. Every day they've been in contention or winning with different riders, different types of stage and different terrain. And it was interesting, Trentin being asked there about the support that De La Cruz would get. De La Cruz, of course, another rider that's leaving Quickstep, in his case for Team Sky. Trentin's leaving for Orica Scott. But those guys obviously still very much part of the team. And you get a sense that there's a real sort of sense of family at Quickstep. I saw in Andorra this morning David de la Cruz riding to the start with another Quickstep rider without a number on his back, and I thought, who's that? Is that just some punter dressed in Quickstep kit? It was in fact Dan Martin, who lives in Andorra. Quite a lot of the Andorran residents came out to watch the start day. Simon Gerrans was there, Nathan Haas was there. I'm not sure if Nathan Haas actually lives in Andorra, but he was there. Dimension Data rider. But on the sprint, I mean, that bone of contention about whether Trentin is a sprinter or not. I have to say, it was a sprint today, but you look at the sprint at the same part, it wasn't even second string, it was third string. No disrespect at all, but there wasn't really a single top, you know, Premier League sprinter in amongst it. At the finish, I spoke to one of Trentin's teammates, Julien Alaphilippe, the Frenchman, and he just said what happened in the finish. Here's Julien Alaphilippe.
I'm really, really happy. The team did a really great job today. We control all the day with Tim De Klerk in the front, and a big effort from Niki Terpstra and Bob Jungels on the final, and at the end we did a really perfect lead out for Trentin. So I'm really happy for him, for the team, and the Vuelta really are really good for us.
Thank you.
Julien, can I quickly ask you what are your personal ambitions in the race?
Well, just do it my job and take day after day. No ambition for GC now. And I just want to enjoy, help my team, and maybe try to win one stage.
So Alaphilippe there, he is a rider who's staying at Quickstep, and one of the young riders who the team is really being built around for the future. Bob Jungels being another one, Gaviria, Fernando Gaviria being another one. He says he'll try and win a stage, maybe tomorrow. Tomorrow's one that could actually suit him. Got a bit of information about that later on in the episode. But I mentioned the absence of top-tier sprinters. One who's there, who's among the sort of top tier, or certainly knocking on that door, is John Degenkolb. But he didn't contest today. He's unwell, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, they announced it on Twitter, which is interesting, or it came out on Twitter. They certainly weren't making any effort to disguise the fact that Degenkolb has been ill for a couple of days. That left Trek Segafredo. Perhaps Edward Toynes could have done something, but I don't.
He was up there.
He was fourth.
He was fourth.
You were watching the stage, right?
Yeah. But I'd done so well in the tale of the Etapa, which was 100% fact. 100% top facts. You're right. But the first three, there was a bit of a gap, wasn't there, really? I mean, he really was best of the rest, and the rest were miles back. The other one, there is another good sprinter here, Magnus Cort Nielsen of Orica. Won two stages last year, but he's not basically allowed to sprint. He's here because they've got the Chavez and the two Yates brothers. Everything's for the overall. And so, you know, he's not been up there today. So yeah, it's a very slim sprinting field, but you know, take nothing away from Trentin. He's won he's now won stages in all three Grand Tours, and that, well, there's only 99 other people we are told who have done that in the history of the sport.
Aren't we going to laud my countryman Juanjo Lobato? Come on, he did that.
Second, and he went very early though, didn't he?
Yeah, he went very early. You know, he has had a kind of difficult season because, well, he moved teams this winter from Movistar team to the Loro NL Jumbo. And he has fit more or less okay in the squad, despite the fact that he arrived there not knowing a single word of English. But he's had a kind of difficult season for private circumstances that can upset every once a year, and in this case he has suffered them, but yet in the last month he has a very good shape. He won a stage at the Tour de l'Ain, and here on the Vuelta a España, on this first sprint, he has done quite well. I mean, of course he went early, but I guess that's because he's still finding himself, finding that confidence that distinguishes the winner sprinters from the contending sprinters. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him getting a victory somewhere on the way to Madrid.
Well, the rider who was third, Tom van Asbroek, the Belgian rider from Cannondale, one of the Belgian contingent at Cannondale, the classic squad. He came with Sepp van Marck from Lotto NL Jumbo over the winter last year. I was surprised to see him up there. That was a bit of a surprise to me. And I caught up with his teammate Tom Schoens, I think that's the pronunciation, making his Grand Tour debut, actually, at this Vuelta at the finish. Here is Tom Schoens.
The best Etapper ever! He rode very well. Did you expect to see him up there today?
Yeah, for sure. He's been sprinting really well since Poland, so every day we're trying to help. Well, not every day. There's only four sprints, so we're trying to help him out those 4 days, and Scully did an amazing job today, and so did Simon, and Tom just had to finish it off.
Struggling to hear you a bit, but I guess the field here is there aren't many top sprinters, so there's an opportunity, isn't there, for other guys and teams like yours?
Yeah, for sure. For us, there's always chances every day, so we'll take them as they come, and we'll try and pull off something.
And how are you finding it so far?
I'm loving it. Definitely hot today, but yeah, hopefully it rains one day, and then that'll be my day.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits, and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you to Rafa, our headline sponsor. They are our fantastic supporters throughout the year. They enable us to be here covering the Vuelta, as they did indeed at the Giro and the Tour. A reminder that you can buy some nice, lovely cycling podcast Rafa kit. They do Pelle de Charme jersey, T-shirt and casquette. Some of the jerseys have sold out, which is sort of good news and bad news. Bad news if you want one. Good news that they've sold out. They're making new ones. They'll be available soon. Pedalers de Charme is also being launched as a range for females. You can go to the shop at rafa.cc or on our website, thecyclingpodcast.com. Click on shop. It'll take you to the cycling podcast page on the Rafa website. And we will, this week at some point, be launching our poll to find a Pedaler de Charme for week one. We'll present a Pedaler de Charme each week of the Vuelta, as we did at the Giro and the Tour. And we'll launch a poll. But send your nominations in. If there's anybody that catches your eye, anybody you think fits the criteria for Pedaler de Charme, send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com with your nominations.
I finally got around to watching the Rafa film on Colombian cycling, and it's excellent. It is excellent, and I hope that our Kilometre Zero, or rather, Richard, your Kilometre Zero, are largely centering around Luis Herrera, the first Colombian to win a Grand Tour, and that was at the Vuelta in 1987, when the race used to be held in the springtime rather than in late summer. That will be out tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, for Friends of the Podcast. And if you're not a friend of the podcast already, you can sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. It's £10 for a full year's worth of content. So that's 9 episodes of Kilometre Zero here at the Vuelta, which will be released on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, and all of our special documentary style shows, live shows, series from the classics, our road trip from the Tour de France, which were too hot to broadcast on the regular free feed for everybody, so only our friends can listen to that. And if you are if you've signed up and you're a little confused how to get the episodes onto your smartphone, there are full instructions on thecyclingpodcast.com. There's now a link on the very first page which gives you a sort of step-by-step how to add the feed to your phone. And if you really have trouble and it's not working out for you, please do email us at contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. Don't just kind of pay and then, oh, it's not worked and, oh, I'm disappointed. Let us know. And we do have somebody who will be able to give you some support and make sure that you can listen to the episodes you've paid for. So, yeah, there's loads of great stuff on that feed. End of advert.
If I can work it, I think anyone can. We'll actually hear a clip from that Kilometre Zero that's coming out tomorrow at the end of this section. The Rafa film that you mentioned, Lionel, is called Abrathos. And it is, as mentioned last night, the highlight for me was the interview with Esteban Chavez's mother. Although Lucho Herrera does feature in it too. And as you say, our Kilometre Zero tomorrow is about Lucho Herrera's 1987 Vuelta win. Now, today was one of those days where we expected a breakaway. And you know, a bit like the Tour de France, the team that caught our eye for getting in the breakaways was Wanty Group Gobert. Here, one of those smaller teams is Caja Rural. There's also Manzano Postobon, whose DS, by the way, is a man called Oscar Vargas, who finished fifth in the Vuelta in 1987 behind Lucho Herrera. 4 Colombians in the first 10 in that Vuelta, 8 Colombians in the first 20, 10 Colombians in the first 25 that year. Incredible. Across 2 teams. The team that Vargas rode for was Postobon, who sponsor the team that he's helping to run now. So it all ties up.
And Caja Rural probably would have been around then as well, because that was the team of Marino Lajareta, who was the Adam Hansen of his day, I guess. I mean, he made a habit of riding all three Grand Tours. And in those days, as I said earlier, the Vuelta was in the spring, and sometimes there was only like a week between the end of the Vuelta and the start of the Giro. And I read a good piece by Laura Messiger, Peloton magazine. Sorry if I've got the website wrong, or I think it was for Peloton. Just a short interview with Lajareta talking about he'd seen that so few riders had tried to do all three Grand Tours in a year, and he heard that one of them say that it nearly finished him, and it was just too hard. So he thought, well, I'd better try and do that. And I think one year he actually finished in the top 10 in all three races. I can't remember which year that was, but he was kind of the real diesel Grand Tour rider of his era. For the Caja Rural team, which I believe, Fran, is a bank. Originally would have been for kind of agricultural workers, farmers, that kind of thing. A bit like the Spanish version of Crédit Agricole, which is a French bank, very similar kind of thing. And they've recently come back into cycling in the last 4 or 5 years after quite a big breakout.
Yeah, in the last 10 years or so. But, you know, I was thinking of something. Before going deep into the Caja Rural thing, do you want to know one trivia fact of mine? Do you know whose hometown we went through today?
Only because you told me about 10 minutes ago. But tell our listeners, because they don't know.
We went through Valls, which is Xavi Tondo's hometown. Xavi Tondo, his name probably rings a bell, because he was a quite well-known rider in the first years of this century. He even got to win a very nice stage at Paris-Nice. Catalan rider, and rode for the Cervelo Test team and the Movistar team, and unfortunately died on 2011, if I remember correctly, in a very freak accident in a parking lot up in Sierra Nevada. It was a real disgrace, because he was one of these enlightening people, always smiling, always shouting to everybody. He was very kind to the fans, very kind to the journalists, very kind to fellow cyclists. An amazing fella who was actually pointing to become a real contender in Grand Tours, because he was a late bloomer, but he was becoming a great climber, great time trialist. But unfortunately, he died. His family, though, has kept being around in the cycling world. They run a very prestigious one-day race here in Valls for amateur cyclists, and one of Xavi's brothers, Alfonso, has driven the broom wagon here in the Vuelta a España for several years. And that will probably, you know, it could be a good idea to actually record a kilometer zero on that.
Yeah, great idea, Fran. I think that we are doing that, actually, yes. But Javi Tondo, I mean, he died just days, I think, after Wouter Weiland died in 2011. And it was, obviously, both were terrible tragedies. Weiland died during the Giro. But Tondo's death was such a freak accident, almost too bizarre to believe to be true, but a terrible incident because he was a very popular guy, always smiling and seemed to be very well liked.
Without dwelling on the incident, Rich, we should probably explain what happened to Xavi Tondo, because it was a freak accident, as you said, Fran, a tragic accident, but he was crushed between a vehicle. The handbrake came off, and he was crushed between the vehicle and a garage door. I mean, a terrible accident, a freak accident, and a real black week or so in professional cycling. And I think Dan Lloyd was a teammate of Xavi Tondo's, and always said, you know, what a sort of friendly, you know, ray of sunshine. I mean, this is a kind of cliche that you sort of hear when people pass away, particularly in tragic circumstances, very young. But Dan Lloyd has always said, you know, Tondo was a really sort of super guy, a great teammate, always brightened up a room when he came in. So, yeah, there we are. He's a son of Catalonia, and there's many more, isn't there, Fran? I mean, this is a fairly rich area of cycling, if nothing else, because Girona is not that far away up the coast there and inland a bit, which is kind of like Andorra, almost a sort of home of professional cycling in Spain and Andorra, which is not Spain and it's not France.
I thought you were warming to it a bit last night, Lionel, because we had a reasonable meal. But back to Caja Rural, and Fran, you spoke to one of their riders at the end, Nick Schultz, who was in that breakaway, had a big day out, young Australian rider, won a stage of Tour de l'Avenir last year, I think, making his Grand Tour debut. Let's hear your interview with him now, shall we?
Today, it didn't require much push to get in the breakaway. I guess the teams probably knew that with a headwind it would be relatively easy to control, and seeing as only initially four of us went up the road and then Le Bon came across, I think they knew it was going to be pretty controllable. So yeah, actually, to be honest, the first 50k of the stage were pretty easy and it didn't really require much effort, but after that we got a little bit more into the exposed country and it was just a block headwind and really hard. But yeah, it's a nice experience to be in the breakaway in my first Grand Tour, my first year pro, so yeah, that's a little box ticked for now.
How many messages are you expecting to have on your mobile phone when you get back to the bus?
I'm not sure. Who knows? Different time zone here in Europe, and probably most of the people that know me are following back in Australia. So whether or not they stayed up to watch the stage, I'm not sure. But I know it is being shown live this year in Australia for the first time. So yeah, no, you know, it's always nice to show my face and be up the front. I never really like racing negatively, but yeah, no, it's a great experience, and I hope people back home saw it.
So that was Nick Schultz, Fran, and you know, tell us a little bit more about the team.
Caja Rural is the latest iteration of a long story of cycling. This team was set up maybe in 2009 or so as a continental team and then stepped up to a pro-continental team. In the next few years, they have actually grew quite a bit and they have begin to actually race outside of Spain. They have produced pretty nice riders, you know, besides the one that are currently in their roster, such as Jaime Rosón, who is set to join Movistar team this year, or Luis Guillermo Mas and Diego Rubio, who was also in the breakaway today and shouldn't take too long to join the World Tour ranks this year or maybe the following one. They have, for example, made room for Michał Kwiatkowski, Carlos Barbero, Jose Gonzalez, currently at Katusha. Pretty nice young riders who have developed via breakaways and in a rich international calendar.
Hugh Carthy as well at Cannondale now, came from Caja Rural. And I was supposed to meet one of their development riders today, Freddie Ovett, an Australian, well, British-Australian, who is the son of Steve Ovett, the former Olympic champion runner from the 1980s. Freddie Ovett rides for the development team. And unfortunately, he couldn't make it to the finish today, so I haven't been able to meet him, but we will catch up with him at some point.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
I'm Hayden Groves. I'm executive chef for Baxter Story. I work in London. I'm riding the Free Tours Challenge, which is all free Grand Tours, the Giro, the Tour and the Vuelta one day before the pros, to help raise $1 million for Cure Leukemia. I'm also writing a charity cookbook inspired by the journey and the food of the regions called Back in the Saddle, which will be available in the end of November. And I'm also proudly associated with Science in Sport, where I'm one of their ambassadors. An average day for us, well, especially myself, I suppose, with what I've learned with working with SIS. And I think it was Stephen Moon, the CEO, that he summed it up: real food first, where possible, and then the products. So in other words, your body's craving real food. So breakfast for me would be about some soft-boiled eggs, have everything you need in there. I'd have some yogurt and some fruit, coffee. I think every rider needs coffee, and as each of the stages go on, you generally find you drink more coffee before you get on the bus. I would also have they do these 20-gram whey gels, which are fantastic, actually, and they've just launched two great new flavours. And then it would be bid-ons I would say one with just with salts, so an electrolyte, and one I would use a product called Go Hydro, so it's got a little bit of food in there, some carbs in there, and I'd alternate. And every now and then, depending on the heat, it might just be some water, just to sort of, because then you've got some to put down the back of your neck, depending on the temperature. 4 hours into the ride, I would always look for something with protein in it, and like one of their protein bars that has carbs and protein, because it's important. Every 4 hours, the body needs about 20 grams of protein to just maintain its muscle mass. Yeah, we'd be looking for a rider of my sort of weight. We're looking about 60 grams of carbs per hour. So that could be through a gel or a bar or maybe a little cake or a sandwich. And it's important, really, to try and... Your legs fatigue, but so does your palate. So you're really craving something different. Again, morbid onset. And I would try and keep the gels for the afternoon rather than in the morning. If it was a particularly, should we say, grippy finish, I might want something with some caffeine in it. And then, as we mentioned before, recovery is super, super important. You've got a 20 to 30 minute window straight after you get off the bike or after you exercise. And I would say it's not just for tour riders, it's for anyone that's done any serious training, a Rego, and they've just got some Rego Plus out with some extra little bits and pieces in there that are really going to help your recovery process, and there's protein in there as well. So get that down you. And then we would transfer to the hotel, we'd have a massage, and it would be proper food. Something again with lots of greens, some carbs and protein, again lean protein, chicken, fish. And then in the evening I would use a product called Overnight Protein. The mantra is what it says on the outside: go to bed in pieces. And we've certainly had a few days like that, and wake up whole again. I wasn't going to test that theory out, so I made sure I always have my Overnight Protein, which is slow release, just sort of helps repair the muscles overnight. And then we get up and repeat.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
So we heard there from Hayden Groves, Science in Sport ambassador, and he's riding the Grand Tours, all three of them, one day ahead of the race. So he's just finished tomorrow's stage today. And he sent me a message actually saying, finish tomorrow, summit finish, first summit finish, super hard, slopes of 20%, certainly not what the route suggested. Chris Froome, in his press conference after the stage today, said that he didn't know the climb, hadn't checked it out, didn't know anything about it. So it sounds like it was Perigueux, of course, at the Tour de France, very, very steep finish that caught Froome out. I'm not sure that the issue was the steepness, but that could be interesting tomorrow, because if gaps open up on a slope like that, they really do open up. So we look forward to that. But there's a bit of unfinished business from yesterday's stage to Andorra to clear up. One of the talking points was obviously Alberto Contador's performance. And Fran, you spoke to Peter Stettina this morning, his Trek Segafredo teammate, who sort of nursed him up the climb. Here's what he had to say.
That's a grand tour, and if someone has a bad day, and that's why you have teammates. And Alberto is a legend of the sport, and he's given so much to the sport. I was honored to try to help him in a moment of difficulty. It would have been nicer if I were helping set him up for an attack than to limit the damage. But this is racing, and it's 2.5 minutes is a lot, but it's not impossible. He's done bigger things in this sport before, so we still have faith in him. And it was not like it was just a normal bad day. You could see that he was really below his level, like something was wrong. So I think he'll be better after a sprint stage today and another day to recuperate the legs, and I'm not so stressed.
From your point of view, what was wrong? You said something was wrong. What's wrong from your point of view?
I don't know. I just I think maybe the heat got to him a little bit. He wasn't used to the heat, maybe, or maybe just like not feeling so great. That's up for him to decide what he doesn't feel,
So Peter Stettina, they're still quite bullish about Alberto Contador's prospects. We shall see. Fran's screwing up his face doesn't seem to maybe share his confidence. Lionel, you spoke as well at the finish to Nicholas Roach.
Yeah, lying third on general classification, 2 seconds behind Chris Froome. David de la Cruz of Quickstep is, of course, second, also 2 seconds behind. And I think TJ Van Garderen still just behind Nicholas Roach, is that right? So BMC are very well placed. And a couple of people have seen asking on Twitter, why don't BMC, maybe go to try and, you know, get the time bonus at the intermediate sprint, or, you know, try and mix things up. It's only a 2 second gap. Maybe they could pinch the red jersey. So, I mean, I kind of know why that can't happen, because, you know, the race is on lockdown and, you know, it's not as easy. It might only be 2 seconds, but 2 seconds on the road is, you know, difficult to come by. And maybe Nicholas Roach is a little bit more clued in as to the difficulty of tomorrow's climb than Chris Froome perhaps is at this stage, because he certainly wasn't really talking up his chances of pinching anything in the uphill finish tomorrow.
Tomorrow, I think, should be one of those climbs that kind of still suit me, at least better than some of the longer ones that are coming up at the end of the week. But, the way Froome was going yesterday, I think he's still one of my favourites tomorrow with Chavez on top of the hill.
And just how's the first few days been for you here?
Yeah, they've been really good and exciting team time trial. I think it was very important for the team to win. It was very important for me. I was dying to win a team time trial in a Grand Tour, and that's another tick in the box. And a bit disappointing on Sunday to give away a few precious seconds and cost me wearing the red yesterday. But yesterday I was happy with how I climbed. I think I'm more or less where I am, you know, on top of the climb, around 7-8, and I think that's where I should be fighting for over the next 3 weeks.
And lastly, people sort of say to us, why don't BMC try and set something up and pinch a few seconds at the intermediate sprints? Can you explain? I mean, it's obviously not as easy as that, but, you know, is there any chance of trying to do something like that?
No, it's not as easy as that, you know. I mean, yesterday, for example, was a perfect one to go for at the bottom of the climb. But as you see, we arrived as a reduced bunch, and the only one that kind of had the legs to go there was Froome. All the others, you know, to be honest, I thought about it and I moved out of the line and say, it's there, but it's going to be a bit of an effort. And then straight after that, we turned right and we're up onto the climb, and there was another sprint to do. And I don't think I would have been capable of doing the sprint for the intermediate and then trying to hang on again straight after that onto the climb. So I chanced it and said, all right, I just have to give away that and try and hold on as long as I can on the climb.
So that was Nicholas Roach. Any other business chaps? You spoke, I think, to the Bora team this morning, because Rafał Majka, another rider we fancy to do well here, disappointing Andorra and lost more time today.
Yeah, he lost 3 minutes and a half today, if I am not mistaken. Apparently he's sick on his stomach and he's not feeling really well, so it seems like his Grand Tour season is going to come to a disappointment, an overall disappointment.
Bit of sickness going around.
I know how he feels. I'm sick of my stomach as well. It's just too large. I need to get back on my training regime once my couple of stints at the Vuelta are over.
Less of that cake as well.
It wasn't really this stomach sickness isn't related to my sickness at all, to my driving at all, right?
No, it's not related to your driving. No, I'm sick of the size of it rather than sick of the feeling sick in the stomach. I'm not going to. Now we're in Spain, I'm not going to pass up the opportunity for some wonderful tapas. As what could we eat when we get? Because we're staying down in Castellón this evening, which is a good couple of hours south of here. And just one of these towns. This is the hometown of Villarreal, the football team. I had no idea that was where. I mean, they're a suburb of that big town. It's kind of a sprawling type of place. But I remember Daniel Freeb and I were there last year. We had two really good meals there. So, but what should we be eating when we are in that region of Spain? Any ideas, Fran?
Well, if you are sick in your stomach, probably a salad, maybe, or a bowl of rice.
A rice cake.
Right, some rice cakes with olive oil, you know. Actually, I'm not quite familiar with the food in Castellón, but I'm sure that we will find the perfect spot for us.
Great, well, let's go and do that. In the meantime, we'll be back tomorrow night, hopefully with Daniel Freeb again. He had to shoot off tonight, a bit of a drive, but that's all from us tonight. Lionel, thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Fran.
Thank you all.
Listen to Kilometer Zero, our morning show at the Vuelta a España, by becoming a friend of the Cycling Podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com.
Herrera was and remains very, very quiet, very reserved. So, and I think, you know, that was always difficult for the press and remains that way. Getting hold of him, finding him is as difficult as it ever was. And he is still hugely recognizable and beloved everywhere. He just remains this huge symbol of what Colombians can do. Again, we have this image of him doing it through nothing else than raw talent, which, of course, is actually kind of insulting because a huge amount of training and preparation went to it. But I think the press at the time managed to overlook that.
Yeah, I know him. Sometimes the Colombian Federation makes some different stuff, and they put all riders together, the old fellas and the new fellas. I'm Esteban Chavez. I'm 27 years old. I'm a professional bike rider from one Australian team. I'm Colombian. Yeah, he's really quiet. He's really shy. Like, when he was a rider, and still now the same. But when you take a couple of beers, he's more open.